Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. We're so glad to have you with us here this evening on Ask Herbal Health Expert Susan Weed, a two-hour radio show each Tuesday night. Herbal medicine is people's medicine, simple, safe, effective. Please bring your curiosity and health questions. Susan will enlighten, surprise, and delight you. I know most of you know Susan Weed already. She's my mom, so I know her. But for those of you who have not yet met Susan, I'd like to share. She is the author of the Wise Woman Herbal series, five wonderful books on women's health and herbal medicine, including Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, Breast Cancer, Breast Health! The Wise Woman Way, Healing Wise, The Wise Woman Herbal, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, and Susan's latest book, Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way. In addition to being the editor at Ash Tree Publishing and writing her books, Susan is the director of the Wise Woman Center in Woodstock, New York. The Wise Woman Center is open to the public on appointment-only basis. She offers weekend workshops, intensives, and apprenticeships throughout the season. Susan is also available to you online via wisewomanmentor.com. There you can go and view her weekly e-zine. You can subscribe to receive a notification via email each week, or you could join her mentorship program. Susan also offers distance learning correspondence courses and online courses at the Wise Woman University. But you can also just go to her website, susanweed.com, where you will find thousands of pages online with recipes, articles, art features, and so much more. Well, for now, let's see what Susan has to share with us this evening. Thank you, and welcome, Susan.
Thank you so much, Justine. Green blessings, and welcome to all of you listeners. Thanks for being here with me once again. The word around and about here is snow, 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 and more. Snow, snow, snow. So we're getting ready to have a great snow day. Over the past couple of days, actually since the beginning of February, I have been reminding people that it is indeed the true beginning of spring now, even though winter still has that kind of power. Spring really has begun, and if you want to get in on the ground floor of spring, if you want to get in on the beginning of spring this year, start going outside now, every day, just for a little bit of time. Put your hands on the trunks of the trees. You'll be able to feel the sap moving underneath the bark. And look at the buds. Over the next couple of weeks, you will see those buds starting to swell. I bet you're already noticing that there's more light. Spring doesn't start at spring equinox. That's when the day and the night are equal lengths. No. Spring starts all the way back here at the beginning of February. So let's welcome spring and welcome Rebecca, too.
Hello. Hi. Yes, lots of signs of spring out here, for sure.
Okay. Oh, goody. All right. Hey.
Yeah.
So we should probably get right on it because Justine tells me that there are a lot of email questions.
There are a lot of email questions, and there are a couple of callers, and just want to remind everybody that we have two guests joining us at 9 p.m. this evening, Elizabeth Mewis and Freddie Zenthal Weaver, and talking about Tantra and sexual enlightenment. So that sounds exciting. And we'll open up the line for the first caller in the 703 area code. Hello.
Hi there. Hey, Rebecca, thanks for taking my call, and good evening, Susan.
Hi.
So I'm actually a second-time caller. I have an update on my previous condition and a new question as well.
Okay.
I had called before because I had a pretty intense coffee addiction, and coincidentally, I just realized because I was going to call about this other question, today was the first day I didn't have coffee in, like, a really long time, so pushing it back in the day really worked out for me well, and I'm happy not to be totally a slave to it anymore.
Oh, how wonderful, because coffee is such a beneficial herbal medicine when we're not addicted to it.
Yeah, so thank you for that.
You're welcome.
The second question I have is also about addiction, and this is a health question that is slightly attenuated. I have a dear friend who is a pretty significant portion of my life, so I imagine I'm going to feel the effects of this as well, and any sort of resources or advice I can bring to bear to support, I would like to be able to, hence my call. But my friend's younger sister is just 21 years old, and she has had a bit of a rough go, and unfortunately, through some bad life circumstances, ended up becoming a heroin user. And she's been in rehab and with some relapses, but to get her away from the situation, she is going to be moving in with my friend. So I was wondering if you had any herbal allies, not just for recovering addicts, but also perhaps for the people who support and care for them.
Well, let me start off by saying something that's rather shocking. Our brains produce heroin. And so we are all really heroin addicts. We all produce it and we respond to it, and there are certain things that cause the brain to produce greater amounts of it. For instance, fasting or eating a very limited diet, like a raw food diet, will actually cause the brain to produce heroin. And I'm not talking about something that's like heroin. I'm talking about the actual stuff.
Wow.
England has a very different way of dealing with those who are addicted, and it is an addictive substance when you make it in your own brain or whether you shoot it into your arm or sniff it up your nose, right, or take it in any other way. And what they do in England is they have heroin clinics where you can go and get your daily shot of heroin. Heroin itself does not cause personality changes. And there's no particular reason to demonize people who are addicted to it when we can understand that we are all addicted to it. It may or may not work that you will not use heroin again, but usually what people are given to supposedly cure their addiction is a drug, methadone, which is far harsher on the body, far worse to take, far more lethal, and far more addictive than heroin.
So it seems like there aren't available where we are the kind of treatment options that might, you know, I mean, it's something instead of methadone.
That might work with her instead of making her think that she's wrong.
Right.
I'm gonna be very simplistic, and I beg everyone to please forgive me for being so simplistic.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, we would reach out to take heroin if we didn't feel that we were good enough in and of ourselves. And when we live in a legal climate that says that the heroin addict is a bad person, then that attitude itself encourages the use of heroin.
If I may add a small detail about the...
So one of the most important things that I know of is to encourage reasonable self-love and self-acceptance. There is a group in California called Shakti Rising.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that one of my past apprentices was or is associated with it. And they actually work with women who are addicted to heroin as well as a variety of other problems who would like to replace their addiction with self-satisfaction.
Wonderful.
Not sugar, not methadone, not coffee, not alcohol, but real self-worth. And that is the only, to my mind, realistic way of working with this.
Well, thank you very much for your perspective. That rings very true. I know that part of the situation that she's coming from has dealt a terrible blow to her self-esteem, self-image, self-worth, and those early 20 years can just be so hard for women. So it's very understandable why she turned to drugs, or heroin in particular. This your advice I would take to heart.
And let's be clear, it's a rare person who goes out looking for heroin.
Yeah.
Usually you associate with the people, and you then find out they're using it, and then they invite you to try it. So you don't even really have the sense that you sought something, but more that something was put in your way.
Mm.
So whatever we can do to help her rebuild self-esteem. Meanwhile, you know me well enough to know that I'm going to suggest that she start drinking nourishing herbal infusions, yes?
Yes, I did know that was coming.
Yeah, and to my mind, the act of making those nourishing herbal infusions for yourself is a wonderful way to start building self-esteem.
I have to say, getting to know the plants is something that does build you inside. So
it definitely does, and drinking the nourishing herbal infusions gives us so much and allows us to make the kinds of changes that we envision for ourselves in our lives. I have never seen anyone successfully change a behavior by blaming themselves.
Well, I thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me tonight. And, yes, you're a treasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Green blessing.
Same to you. Thanks.
Yes, thank you so much. There's a lot of addiction happening all around me, so... let's open up the line for the next caller.
Just in the headline of the newspaper that I walked past yesterday, too.
Yeah, it's the Philip Seymour Hoffman, right?
Yeah.
It's really hitting a lot of people pretty hard right now, and I just actually messaged my friend while you were talking about that and said, follow the link on my page to listen to this right now, because it's something that hits very close to home for me too, because I have people that struggle with this a lot. So that are close to me. So, yeah. So in the 845 area code?
I'm in the 845 area code.
Yes, you're on with Susan.
Thank you. Hi, Susan. This is Cora. I am forever in your Green Witch course.
Hi, Cora.
Sitting quietly on the sideline.
So
calling you actually from Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling about menstrual flooding, perimenopausal menstrual flooding. I'm 47.
Stop.
Stop.
Were you ever in peri-puberty?
Thank you.
There is no such thing as perimenopause. It's a term made up by a white male MD. I was right there. And he told me he made this term up to prevent any woman from ever being taken in by my claim that there's power in menopause. He said, I am going to cut you off at the root. I'm going to make it impossible for any woman ever to feel powerful about menopause. I'm going to make up this term, perimenopause. Just try to make that powerful. Don't use it. Don't let any other woman use this word. There's no such thing. Unless we want to go by the scientific belief that menopause is the last drop of blood you shed, and everything before that is perimenopause, and everything after that is postmenopause, and there is no menopause at all.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's kind
that
of
makes
like
sense.
Saying,
always...
mm-hmm. you know, that there's no labor and delivery. Like, you're pregnant, and then you have a baby, and there's nothing in between.
Yeah, I'm with you. I totally, it always feels weird. Like, how do I talk about, am I, do I get
you're
to
menopausal.
Say, when do I get
you're
to say
menopause.
I'm in menopause?
You're a menopausal
yeah,
woman.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with saying, I'm in menopause, I'm menopausal. You're flooding, your period is erratic, sometimes it's not there at all, then it's there for weeks. You know, you're waking up at night, you cry at the sight of babies. We know what it's like to be menopausal.
Yes. Well, thank you. That's a gift. That's a gift, Susan,
because
it's true.
So in talking to over 10,000 women, I don't think that I spoke to more than two women who had more than one episode of flooding during menopause.
Two women who did not have that.
Out of 10,000. Many women had flooding, but only two had it more than twice.
Oh.
Well. What I'm saying is that flooding during menopause, either, as one woman put it, the 3-foot puddle, or, as happened to me, the 30-day drip. It's flooding whichever way you go, and it leaves you tired. And it's very important to do something about it. Drink nettle infusion, bring your iron up, eat organic liver, bring your iron up, take yellow duct tincture, bring your iron up. And in new menopausal years, the wise woman way, I encourage every woman as she moves into her menopausal years to have a 1-ounce bottle of Shepherd's Purse tincture on hand. Shepherd's Purse is renowned for stopping uterine flooding. Midwives use it after birth and say that...
Yeah, I'm having trouble locating it here. I'm just going to stick it online.
I'm not sure why. It's a very common tincture. But...
And how much would you recommend taking?
If you're actually flooding, you need to be taking it right now. Or is it a
drip? It's flooding. And, I mean, I've had both. Last month I had 3 days of flooding in a menstrual cycle of bleeding that was 23 days. And then this time I'm on day...
How much meat are you eating at this point, Cora?
Plenty. Meat. Lots of meat.
Good. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Very important. Are you still drinking nourishing herbal infusions?
Yes. And taking yellow duck.
Okay. That's
and ladies' mantle.
Ladies' mantle is good if you feel that you have a tendency to flooding and you can take it for months beforehand.
Oh.
Right now, what you can get and what hopefully will work for you is yarrow tincture.
Mm-hmm.
You should be able to get yarrow tincture, yes?
Yes.
I mean, if you can buy any tincture at all, generally you can buy yarrow tincture. And you can start taking yarrow tincture in a dropperful doses.
Mm-hmm.
I have always been a little cautious about using yarrow whenever there's flooding, because I think of a yarrow as a very pushy herb that pushes fluids out of the body.
Mm-hmm.
That it pushes sweat out of the body, and it pushes urine out of the body. And yet, every herbalist that I ask, I read in this book that yarrow is recommended against menstrual flooding. Have you used it? Yes. Has it worked? Yes. Works for
mm-hmm.
lots of women.
Mm-hmm.
So while I prefer shepherd's purse, well, I generally don't talk about yarrow because you're in
mm-hmm.
a situation where you need something now. As soon as you hang up the
mm-hmm.
phone, someone should go get some yarrow tincture for you and start taking it now.
Thank you. Great. Good. And then what about long term, like if the flooding continues for several more cycles, like where's the point where I should be concerned, like this is too much flooding?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what you mean about concerned. You know what
like,
the recommendation of an MD would be, yes?
I guess so, or just, you know, how...
And you go to an MD, and they are going to say, well, let's take your uterus out.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
Then there is no point at which you should be concerned, is there?
Mm-hmm. It just does, it's going to do what it's going to do, and I can nourish it along the way.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Good.
As you know, I put a great store by being in touch with my body and talking to my body
mm-hmm.
and saying, is there something you need or want? Let me tell you what to me is an amazing story, but it also amuses me.
Mm-hmm.
I miscarried. And the next day, I was due to drive down to Dong Island and give a one-day workshop for a group of midwives.
Mm.
And many of my friends said, well, you should do that. You should call and cancel. And I said, well, you know, what better place for me than to be among a group of midwives? You know, what a perfect place to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked one of these friends to drive me down to Long Island. As a matter of fact, it's a very nice time for both of us, and we arranged to stay overnight in the city. During
mm-hmm.
the lunch break, I said to one of the midwives, I feel that my miscarriage is complete, but a bimanual exam, I think, would be called for. And it's something that you can't do on yourself. Could
mm-hmm.
you please, you know, check my uterus, make sure that it's, you know, down and small and that all the products of conception are out of it. She said I would be happy
mm-hmm.
to do that. So we, you know, went upstairs, got to bed, and she did the bimanual exam, and she said, I agree with you. Everything seems to be, you know, about where I would expect it to be, you know, a day after you miscarried. And
mm-hmm.
I said, good, and finished the workshop.
Mm-hmm.
So we're driving from Long Island into the city. And suddenly I say to my companion, please pull over. We're at this gas station and convenience store. And I went in and I got a package of Pepperidge Farm chocolate chip cookies. And I came back out and we continued on into the city. And I opened that package and I proceeded to eat every single one of those cookies. I did not offer any to my companion. And we drove around for a bit, finally found a parking place, and walked, you know, 3 or 4 blocks. And then we were staying in a fifth floor walk-up, and we walked up. And I walked in to the apartment we were staying in, looked around, found the bathroom, went into the bathroom, and passed a piece of placenta as big as my hand.
Wow.
Powered by chocolate chip cookies, right?
Amazing.
So my body knew what it needed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Was chocolate. Said, yes, go in that store and get me some chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And eat it all right now, and then I will do what needs to be done. So be attentive and willing to go where your body wants you to go, even if it seems a little out of the ordinary. What? Me? Eat an entire package of cookies? Excuse me, I don't do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I did, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's good. Yeah, we're taught to not trust our bodies and not trust those instincts. And so it's very affirming to hear you say that and remind me that it's okay to trust what's going on, even though it's new and unfamiliar and a little scary to be bleeding quite so much. But
yes, it is. It is, definitely. Are you feeling, you know, like you can hardly move, or do you still have some energy?
I still have some energy. When the flooding is actually happening, like right afterwards, I feel weak and feels like my arms are weak.
Yeah.
But then it passes, and I either lie on the floor or slow down or drink a cup of tea.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So your
and the
core
clotting
energy,
is
your core energy
my
is not
core,
being drained.
No. Not no. It's okay. I feel like the core is strong and that I'm still shiny and good.
Good.
The clotting is like, wow. It just feels like riding, like skiing down a mountain or something. Like that sensation is I'm used to associating with babies coming out of me, and having something the size of an orange come out and land on the floor is pretty shocking. New experience for me.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
And I guess it's just welcoming that experience, and just, I have a 16-year-old daughter, and I'm watching her on the other end of the fertility cycle, and am reminded, you know, as a woman, that it's ever changing, and it's easy to forget, like, that we are a work in progress, and things are indeed moving and changing and evolving, and it's. It's quite
sounds
a change.
Like,
it's a change.
Like a
it really is the
change. It's a change. Exactly.
Yeah.
Sounds like a family that would benefit from having a quart of motherwort tincture on hand.
Yes, motherwort. Good. Got it. Well, it's good to hear your voice, and it's good to hear your perspective again and reconnect with you. So, let me know if you're in Portland. I'd love to see you.
The closest I'm going to be to Portland will be next year. Well, this year. Seems like next year, but no, it's really this year. The end of August. And there's a big herbal symposium that's happening in Washington State.
Oh, well. Where in Washington?
No, it's not Oregon, but it's very close.
Yeah, well, if you make your way, if you are nearby or driving through or passing through, you always have a place to stay.
So,
thank you so much. Thank you, Susan.
Okay.
Take care.
Been blessing. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, we'll go to our first email. Hi, Susan. I have enjoyed your website and books for the past 10 years and am very excited to begin listening to your radio show. The recipe you share for slippery elm balls has been a real blessing for the past few months. I had been making them for a dear friend and local community elder with terminal cancer of the liver and intestines. One of her primary caretakers, we found very few ingestibles. As one of her primary caretakers, we found very few ingestibles she could tolerate or digest. The slippery elm balls helped lubricate her mouth and throat so wonderfully that she could enjoy other foods again. Thank you so much for that. Sadly, she died a few weeks ago, but I will always remember how much that recipe improved her quality of life. I also wanted to tell you how synchronistic it was to listen to your interview with Chakra last episode, as I was sipping one of her Kavita drinks at the time. I have been drinking them occasionally now for a month or so and love them. They do nourish my gut wonderfully, and I hope you get to try one of them sometime soon. I get mine from the co-op where I work. Thank you again for the information you share, and blessed be.
What fun. Thank you for reading that, Rebecca.
Yeah, it was very nice. So we'll go for the first question, and there are four questions in this question, and so we'll start. Firstly,
maybe,
I would like to...
Okay, well, maybe you could read the whole thing and then maybe just one at a time.
Okay. Firstly, I would like to say that I have the herbal for the childbearing year and absolutely love it. It has aided me numerous times with my first daughter and now again with my second child on the way. Definitely one of the best herbals. I am just becoming acquainted with down there, and I love the art. I am 36 years old and midway through my second pregnancy. I am active and getting all of my nutrients from herbs and food. And so I take red raspberry and nettle infusions and sometimes dandelion leaf. Question, is there any other nutritive herbs you recommend to get my vitamins and minerals from while pregnant, and how often for each? And she has three more questions here. Do you want me to
read
all of them?
Yeah.
Okay. I also want to get my daughter and husband drinking infusions for nutrients. What would you recommend for the whole family on a weekly basis? How much calcium do you get from drinking an infusion of 1 ounce of dried red raspberry leaves? Comfrey, I heard to use the fresh plant as a juice is so much better than dried. What are your thoughts? Also, I heard you say Frontier has the real deal. How about growing from seed? Which one should I look for? Probably. Thank you so much for your time and responses. I know I asked a lot of questions, and you could probably spend a whole show answering them with gratitude.
Okay, let me give a general answer, and then we'll look at the individual questions. Nourishing herbal infusions are foods. They are not drugs. They're not green drugs. They're foods. So this would be asking me what nourishing herbal infusions you should drink or your family should drink and how much is rather like saying to me, should my family eat rice or millet or corn and how often should we eat them and in what quantity? I hope that you're laughing. Because it's kind of an absurd question, isn't it? And I must admit that your question strikes me similarly. Let me be very clear. I rotate through 5 nourishing herbal infusions. I drink approximately a quart of nourishing herbal infusion per day. I don't drink other things. I don't drink water. I don't drink juice. I don't drink wine. We could go on, and all the things I don't drink. I drink nourishing herbal infusion. That's what I drink. If I'm thirsty, I drink nourishing herbal infusion. If I'm going somewhere, I take some with me. It's what I drink. The 5 that I rotate through are nettle, also known as stinging nettle, oat straw, red clover, linden, and comfrey leaf. These 5 nourishing herbal infusions are suitable for everyone and anyone, pregnant or not pregnant, lactating or not lactating, young, old, somewhere in between. These 5 nourishing herbal infusions are the basis and the mainstay of optimum nutrition and optimum health. There's lots of other things that we can do and say and lots of other herbs that we can use for specific problems. But these five things, it's rather like, you know, I have several posters in my kitchen and it says the 10 best foods, right? Or the food bullseye, right? And the things in the middle of the bullseye, there's about 20 of those things. Those are the things we want to have as much as possible of. And the things way out on the outer edge of the bullseye, we want to have those little too rarely. So we know about those things. We know about yogurt and blueberries and salmon. We know about the best foods for health. And we don't worry about it in terms of worrying. We say, salmon is a healthy food. I'm going to be sure that I have salmon about once a week or four times a month. And then we have that salmon. We buy salmon. We have it in the house so that it's available and convenient for us. We say, a quart of yogurt a week is a really good amount of yogurt to have. I'm going to be sure that I buy a quart of yogurt every week and that I push myself to be eating yogurt on a regular basis. But we're not going to get no benefit if we eat less. And no harm is going to come to us if we have more. So when I say I drink about a quart of nourishing herbal infusion a day, that's my goal, and other people have picked up on that goal. But I know people who drink a quart of nourishing herbal infusion every other day, which is three or four a week. And sometimes students say, I just can't get enough of this. Can I drink two quarts a day? And I say, well, often in the summer, I drink two quarts a day because it is what I drink. So if you want to have red raspberry infusion as your sixth in your rotation, that's certainly fine. Nothing wrong with consuming red raspberry. Is it required? Is it needed? Do you have to have red raspberry infusion because you're pregnant? Not to my mind. It's a nice thing to drink, but it's not as nourishing as the other nourishing herbal infusions. And I certainly would only include raspberry along with the other five. I wouldn't use it instead of the others. One of your questions had to do with using fresh, raw greens. Be aware that the Center for Disease Control says that more than half of all cases of food poisoning in the United States occur from fresh fruits and vegetables. As far as I am concerned, one of the reasons that I am using dried herbs and pouring boiling water over them is because it kills any food-borne pathogens. I am not going to put my health at risk by using fresh juice of anything. There is no nutrition of any kind in any juice made from any fruit or vegetable so long as it is raw. I know there are a lot of people out there who are saying otherwise, and that is indeed their opinion. But it's not my opinion that there's no nutrition in it. It's actually a scientific fact. If you'd like to know more about this, please go to YouTube and watch the raw versus cooked debate. And you will see me debating a well-known raw food fattest, and you will be able to hear in detail the scientific facts about the inability to get any nutrition from raw food and why nothing on the planet, from the smallest to the largest, eats raw food. So no, do not use raw comfrey. No, do not use your comfrey. Please use dried and make infusion by weighing out 1 ounce of the herb. All right, which questions didn't I get to? I know I got to the first one, the last one, and the third one.
She was wondering about growing comfrey from seed and which one should she look for.
Oh, horrible idea. If you grow comfrey from seed, you can only grow the comfrey that is really harsh on your liver. Never, ever grow comfrey from seed. Comfrey grows only from root cutting. So long as you're growing comfrey from a root cutting, you are pretty sure that you are getting the comfrey that is safe to consume. And generally, you will get that root cutting from somebody who grows comfrey. Get involved in a garden club in your area. Someone in the garden club will probably be growing comfrey and happy to give you a piece of the root. Doesn't hurt their plant for them to give you a piece of the root. Or see if there's community gardening in your area. Often at community garden sites, there are herb gardens, semi-permanent herb gardens there frequently with comfrey in that garden at the place where people do community gardening. Richter's, R-I-C-H-T-E-R-S, Richter's sells more kinds of herbs and both plant and seed form as well as dried herbs than any other place that I know of. They are in Canada. Be sure that you tell them that you want Symphytum up Landica. You need to get a root. It's a hybrid and it does not set seed. That is the safe comfrey to use. I get dried herb from a great many different places. Frontier is certainly one of the places. Mountain Rose is another place. Pacific Botanicals, Mary Herb, San Francisco Herb. Gosh, there's another place that's not coming to my mind. I list them in my books. So I'm not sure what I said that you decided meant that Frontier was the only one who had real comfrey. Everybody sells real comfrey so far as I know, but I think what you're talking about is Symphytum atlantica. And no one who sells herbs will admit to selling Symphytum atlantica. We still need to work on them to get the question of what is actually being sold clarified. And it's partly because it can be a little difficult when you're running a big business to put your finger exactly on where it's coming from. And since a great many herbalists, myself included in my earlier books, did refer to comfrey as Symphytum officinalis, there is a great deal of confusion there. But we don't want to use the officinalis. We want to use the atlantica. No seeds, only from a piece. Okay, was that all the questions?
Yeah, I think that's all the questions. She does have a P.S. here that says, I also want to let you know, to my pleasant surprise, some of Lisa Thiel's songs are sung in ceremonies here in Peru. Blessed be.
Oh, is this Lisa from Peru?
Not Lisa from Peru. It's Elise from Peru, but she says that Lisa Thiel's songs are sung there.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And there is somebody waiting on the phone, so in the 914 area code.
Hello?
Are you there?
Yes,
hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Susan?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Kathy, and I am from the Bronx, and I am 53, and I've been in fairly great shape health-wise, and all of a sudden I have high cholesterol now. And out of the blue, I work out, I eat fairly.
What?
Huh?
So what? So
oh,
what?
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Susan.
So what? So what? Who cares? Do you care?
Okay, great. I don't care,
do you
truly.
Care?
I don't want to make any changes in my life, but I just thought, you know. Huh?
So can you show me any study that shows that high cholesterol is a health problem?
Well, I keep getting, you know, told that by my physician, so.
You ask your physician for a study that shows that.
I will do that, Susan.
It is definitely the current opinion, but it's unfortunately the wrong opinion. It's not a fact. It's an opinion. And
mm-hmm.
Lowering the cholesterol of lots and lots and lots of people does not reduce the risk of heart attack. It does not improve your health to lower your cholesterol. There is a book out, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the author's name right now, who says that cholesterol is like the person who fights the fire, the firefighter. And you might say, well, would you look at that? There's a lot of firefighters here. Firefighters cause fires. We should kill them.
I got you.
Do firefighters cause fires?
Hell no.
They certainly don't, but they're always there when there's a fire, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what we're beginning to understand is that there are components of the American diet that cause the blood vessels to stiffen, and this allows things to go into the inner part of that blood vessel, and they're sharp and rough, and cholesterol covers them over to protect the inside of the blood vessel.
Mm-hmm.
And if that keeps happening, then a cholesterol plaque forms. But it's not just that the cholesterol is like somehow sticking to the surface of the blood vessel. That, in fact, can't happen. There has to be this breaking, this disruption to the inner surface of the blood vessel before the cholesterol can start to form that plaque. And this
okay.
is why MD says the cholesterol is the firefighter, not the fire setter.
Okay, good.
Reduced cholesterol, but leave the inflammation. You are causing grave harm. So you're a little young for this information, but I'll tell you anyhow because you will grow into it.
Okay.
Cholesterol is the starting point for female hormones.
And oh, okay.
From the age of 70 on, the higher a woman's cholesterol, the longer she will live.
Oh, wow.
So most women, when they have successfully completed menopause, find that their cholesterol is higher.
So why am I 53 with high cholesterol then?
So where are you vis-a-vis menopause?
I'm sorry?
Are you still menstruating?
No. It's been about 3 years since I stopped menstruating.
Well, that's what I just said. That's exactly
right.
What I just said. That most
right.
women find that after menopause, after successfully completing menopause, that their cholesterol is higher.
Okay.
Because you have successfully changed how your hormones are operating.
Awesome.
And you need to have more circulating cholesterol now.
What does that mean, circulating cholesterol?
What the doctor is saying, your cholesterol
okay.
is high.
Okay.
Okay. There's cholesterol in other places that isn't circulating.
Okay.
They only measure circulating cholesterol, the cholesterol that's in the blood.
Ah, I get it.
Right.
Okay.
So it sounds like you're doing great things for your heart, and if you want to do something else for your heart, Hawthorn is a wonderful heart tonic. You
okay.
can use it in almost any form. I find it really convenient to tincture the Hawthorn berries and to take a dropper full of Hawthorn tincture once a day.
Okay, I'm writing it down.
Yeah, and Hawthorn is the fruit of a tree in the apple family. So it's kind of like an apple a day.
Ah, awesome. Thank
right.
you, Susan.
You're so welcome. Green pleasure.
Have a good evening.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We do have another caller waiting.
All right.
In the 860 area code. Hello, are you there?
I am. I had a question. I had been on birth control pills for about 10 years, and I just recently came off of them. And my periods have been very irregular. So I had purchased some Vitex, And I was wondering, what's the proper way to use it? Do you start it when you get your period and then up until when you think you're about to ovulate, or do you continue it all the way through?
I'm not sure what your intention is with the Vitex.
Well,
it's kind of like if I said to you, I went to the art store and I purchased some art materials, what's the best way to use them?
I guess my intention would be to have my period to be more regular and more blood flow.
Vitex won't do that.
What would do that? I only got my period about twice since stopping in the end of August.
I need to roll back just a little bit here because
okay.
It bothers me to talk to people who won't take any power.
Okay.
Were you forced to take birth control pills, or did you choose to?
I chose to take them, and I
then
chose
I
to
would
take
like
them because
to
they're...
hear that. Excuse me. I would like to hear that, please. Not I was on, but I chose to take birth control pills. Could you please say
that? I chose to take birth control pills since
and
I
doesn't
was
that feel doesn't that feel different?
It does. It does. I wish I knew more about it and when I was 14.
Recriminations allowed. No recriminations allowed. No, I'm sorry. I will not allow you to do that. You chose to take birth control pills.
I
did. And you have continued to choose to take birth control pills up until very recently, yes?
Mm-hmm.
And that's all we're establishing is that you're the one who's in charge here. Somebody didn't force you. You weren't put on them. You weren't made to do this. You chose it. Now, personally, I think birth control pills are great. And I have no problem at all with your choice. We need to understand that what most of us, myself included, are choosing is about as abnormal a use of the female human body as we can get. What is the female human body supposed to do between puberty and menopause?
Have a period.
Absolutely not.
No?
No. No. The female human body between puberty and menopause is supposed to be pregnant.
Okay.
Having babies, lactating, feeding those babies, not menstruating.
Well, I guess I accomplished
our
that.
Our grandmothers, maybe, over their entire lives, or our great-grandmothers, over their entire lives, maybe menstruated a couple of dozen times.
Really?
Yes. Menstruation is not normal for the adult female. She is supposed to be pregnant or lactating. Menstruation and ovulation especially takes a very big toll on the body, and especially in women who have not yet given birth, leads to cancer. One of the very best things that a woman who doesn't wish to be pregnant can do is to take birth control pills. This reduces her risk of ovarian cancer by 1,000% over the course of her lifetime. And reduces the risk of breast cancer by between 400 and 600%.
So I didn't do anything bad then. I mean, in terms of my reproductive health.
Not. You did something wonderful
okay.
for yourself. Protected yourself against pregnancy.
It's been something that I've been worried about now just because things haven't been as regular as I remember now that I've come off them. I've chosen to come off them.
If you started taking them at 14, your period wasn't regular. Your period was not regular at 14.
Okay.
You know, you might be remembering that, but it's not true. In fact, you have not yet established a regular menstrual cycle. And it will take you generally between 12 and 24 months to establish a regular menstrual cycle.
Okay. So at this point, 5-6 months after stopping, I shouldn't be worried if things aren't regular in any way then. It's been something I've been terribly worried about.
I would not worry at all, because the worry, in fact, is going to, you know, be more of a problem than the birth control pills ever were.
Okay.
A woman named Louise Lacey was in a somewhat similar situation to yours, but with, of course, her desires and takes on it. And she wanted to have a regular menstrual period, but she wanted to have a regular menstrual period because she wanted to get pregnant. And she tried all kinds of things and was quite unsuccessful. So, being a rather keen intellect, she said, all right, what am I missing here? And she started researching menstruation, and she found that menstruation is light sensitive. In fact, ovulation is triggered by the full moon or by light at night. And so she wrote a book called Lunaception, L-U-N-A-C-E-P-T-I-O-N, Lunaception, in which she describes in detail how she turned her bedroom into an experimentation chamber and the results of what she found out. And the kind of final thing that she settled on was you sleep in your bedroom in the complete and total dark. You have to stuff towels under the door, turn off everything with a telltale light, dark curtains over the windows. It should be so dark you can't see your hand in your bedroom. And you sleep in that dark, dark, dark bedroom for 14 days. And then you turn on a nightlight for 3 nights. And you sleep with that nightlight on all night in your bedroom for 3 nights. And then you spend 12 more days in the dark. And that's one cycle. And then you start again, 14 days in the dark, 3 days with a nightlight on, and 12 days in the dark.
Interesting.
And she found that by doing that, she was able to reset her endocrine system by the very thing that sets it in the first place, which is light at night.
I will have to try
that.
If
there are mothers out there going, oh my gosh, I have a nightlight in my child's room, good for you that you have suddenly realized what a horrible thing this is. Get that nightlight out of your kid's room now. Teach your child to be at ease in the dark. If they must go to sleep as an interim measure with a light on, go in and turn it off as soon as they're asleep. Do not let any child or any adult for that matter sleep in a room with any kind of light. In fact, the greatest pollution that we deal with, the pollution that has the worst consequences for our health, is light pollution. Not air pollution, water pollution, soil pollution, but light pollution.
Living in a city, I know that all too well.
That's right. A blackout for you. And are you drinking your nourishing herbal infusion?
I have been. I've been drinking alfalfa and red raspberry leaf and nettle on different days.
Okay. I don't like alfalfa very much. I don't usually suggest that people drink it. No. If you must, you know, go ahead. But it kills goats.
Really?
And I really don't like it much at all. Red clover, yeah. Alfalfa, And
well, maybe
raspberry.
I'll
switch from the alfalfa to red clover. I think you'll like the taste of it better, and I think you'll really like the way it feels in your body. And red raspberry, if, you know, as I just said to the previous caller, if you want to drink it, I got nothing against it. I personally don't like it, and you couldn't hardly pay me to drink red raspberry infusion. I find it very astringent and tannic, and it makes my lips curl up, and I just don't like it at all. I think once you start using the nutritive herbs, because raspberry is not a nutritive herb.
Mm-hmm.
Stinging nettle is high in protein. It's high in vitamins. It's high in minerals. Raspberry leaf isn't. Oat straw is high in protein. It's high in vitamins. It's high in minerals. Raspberry leaf isn't. So women like to drink raspberry leaf when they're pregnant because it's a uterine tonic. But there's nothing
I was,
and we don't especially need to tonify your uterus.
I'm hoping to conceive is what this all comes down to. So that's why I had started adding that one.
Ah, so not so spicy. Okay. Interesting.
That's kind of where everything was coming full circle. I chose to come off birth control to try to conceive.
Good for you. Claim that power. Yay. Yeah.
Thank you. I need that.
Yeah. So basically, birth control pills are like a kind of time machine or an anti-time machine. Like if you start taking birth control pills when you're 14,
mm-hmm.
when you stop taking them, your body's still 14.
Okay. That's interesting.
So be kind. Well, nothing happened during those years, right?
Correct.
So that's why I say it's like an anti-time machine. It's like time stood still. The same thing if women take hormones during and after menopause, it's the same kind of time machine. You know, I've been there with women in their 70s and 80s who've taken hormones for decades and now have breast cancer. And when they come off those hormones, which they are usually encouraged to do because of the breast cancer, it's as though they're at the same day of menopause that they were when they started taking the hormones.
Okay.
So I think of birth control pills and hormones, and of course birth control pills are hormones, especially reproductive hormones that women take, as not allowing us to grow up. And so I do personally prefer to see younger women use some other form of birth control and to, most women would benefit from about 10 years on birth control pills, but I'd like to see that just a little, as you say, a little older than 14. It's you think you know everything when you're 14, but when you get to be 15, you know you didn't know everything.
Well, I really appreciate your view on this, and you've made me feel a lot better.
I'm so glad, and that will help. And the red clover infusion is the herb that I think of as the herb for fertility, not alfalfa. So,
I will look into that.
I definitely encourage you to switch from alfalfa to red clover.
And, thank you very much.
And send me a baby picture.
I will.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great blessing.
Have a good night. Goodbye.
All right, we'll move on to the next email question. Hello, Susan. I'm wondering if you have any experience with lymphoma, which is what the docs are thinking for me right now. Basically, my lymph glands all over my body are enlarged, and I'm in pain and waiting upon a biopsy and results. Please, would you tell me what you know and also what you know about chaga mushrooms? Thank you.
There are two primary herbs that are thought of in connection with the lymph system. One is a small weed that grows in a lot of different places called cleavers or goosegrass. And cleavers tincture goes to the lymphatic system and says, well, hello, everybody. What do we need to get done here? Could we work together to do it? The other herb that is connected to the lymphatic system is poke, Phytolacca Americana. And Polk goes into the lymphatic system and says, all right, everybody, right now, get here. We have stuff to do. Da, 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 da. So they're quite different in their character. Right? Polk is well named. It's like a Polk in the immune system. And Polk is also considered to be extremely anti-cancer. Excellent herb for countering all kinds of cancer. So I would guess in this situation that Polk is an ally that you would want to investigate. You can't just go off to your local store and get Polk root tincture because it is considered poisonous. But I do know that Red Moon herbs and Catskill Mountain herbs do make Polk root tincture from the fresh root, which is the only effective form is from fresh Polk root. And that they are careful wildcrafters of the Polk. I usually suggest that people start out with one drop of Polk tincture. This is a strong herb. So one drop in some water or infusion, some kind of liquid. And that's one drop on one day. And the next day, one drop again. And on the third day, two drops. And on the fourth day, two drops. And on the fifth day, three drops. Continue to go up one drop every other day until you have taken a dose of Polk that gives you side effects. And those side effects can be nausea, they can be dizziness, they can be blurred or double vision. You'll know when you've gotten too much Polk. And whatever your dose was that day, roll back to the previous dose, and that's the most that you should take at any one time. Polk is generally not considered safe to use long term. In other words, we're not talking about something like stinging nettle, which can be an ally to us for our entire lives. We're talking about using Polk when it's needed, in the amount that's needed, and then not using it at all. I make a quart of Polk root tincture approximately every 10 years. And I'm only able to go through that much because I give a bottle to each one of my apprentices. For myself, probably a 1 ounce bottle of Polk root tincture would last me my entire life. Let me just say it again so that you hear it very clearly. The dose of Polk is a tiny, minuscule dose, starting with one drop, not a dropper full. A dropper full, which contains 25 to 30 drops, will almost certainly cause side effects and may cause you to throw up. Go slow, go easy with it, and if it's your ally, it will also help to counter cancer or whatever else is going on in your lymphatic system while quickly reducing the lumps and the swelling in the lymphatic system. Could you use cleavers along with the Polk? You could, but if you did, you wouldn't really be able to say much about either one of them. So if you do want to work with cleavers, what I would suggest is that you start with the Polk. Get yourself established with the Polk. Take about a month to really get yourself on an even keel with the Polk. And then if you want to add a dropper full of cleaver's tincture on a daily basis, if you feel that you need something more, you certainly could do that. What I know about chaga mushroom is that it, like all mushrooms, has some anti-cancer activity. In the 50s, at Duke University here in the United States, a wide variety of foodstuffs were tested for their ability to kill cancer cells in petri dishes. In other words, we'd take cancer cells in the petri dishes, and we would take the foodstuff, and we would put it on the cancer cells and see what happened. And all mushrooms killed almost all cancers. And that includes the regular white mushrooms that you get at the supermarket. Chaga is a rare mushroom. I am deeply concerned that it is going to be over-harvested and overused. It takes a very, very long time for chaga to grow. And I personally don't like to see people using chaga. I would rather see them using any of the other medicinal mushrooms. Now, it may be, and I am not an expert on which mushrooms may have effects on specific cancers. They are all anti-cancer, but there are some mushrooms that do have specific effects, and it might be that there is a specific effect from chaga on the lymphatic system, but not that I know of. I don't think you're on the wrong track with mushrooms, but I think you might be looking at the wrong mushroom if all you're looking at is chaga. Green blessings.
Okay, there is somebody waiting on the phone here in the 786 area code.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Susan. I have a question for you. I was diagnosed with a stage 0 in situ carcinoma on last year towards the end, and I had a lumpectomy. And I'm choosing not to take the tamoxifen. I want to know what you think about this.
In general, it is deeply upsetting to me that the medical profession has decided to have something called stage 0. What does 0 mean to you?
Well, they explained to me they're debating whether to call it cancer or not, but that's what the term, the name is at this point.
That's exactly right. 0 means it's not cancer.
Right.
0 means it's nothing. It's nothing.
Right. They
so
said there were some abnormal
cells. Body surgically you've had a piece of your body surgically removed for nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, and I'm extremely traumatized by this.
And you certainly are. You were scared into doing something that is not going to improve your longevity, and you can tell me that it hasn't improved your health, can't you?
No. Well, it's teaching me something
right
now.
Stage zero, what the best thing that you can do is to become a voice against any woman taking any action for stage 0 cancer, because it's not cancer.
Right. Right.
Cancer, some radical oncologists don't even consider in situ cancer cancer. And I will tell you that really good double-blind studies have been done with in situ breast cancer and in situ prostate cancer and flaxseed muffins. And so they take people who have had in situ cancer diagnosed by biopsy. We're talking about, you know, this is very strict science here. We're not just saying, oh, you know, a rice machine said I had cancer, or an intuitive said, no, we have biopsy results. We have tissue results showing that these people have in situ cancer in the breast or in the prostate. And then we do a double-blind study, and we give half of the participants a muffin with 3 tablespoons of flaxseed baked into it, and the other half of the participants get a regular muffin without flaxseed. And they don't know what they're getting, and the people who are giving them the muffins don't know what's in the muffins. But the surgeons, because all of the people to be in these experiments must agree to have surgery, to have the breast removed or the lump removed or the prostate removed, the surgeons say they know who got the flaxseed muffin, because in those people they can't find the cancer.
Okay. So what is
so,
it, a flaxseed?
Flax seed, ground flax seed baked in muffins.
Okay.
No studies have shown taking flaxseed oil to be beneficial. No studies have shown raw flax seed to be beneficial. And no studies have shown smaller
about
amounts. I'm sorry?
I'm sorry, what I read about flaxseed is that it can do the estrogen levels go up?
No. The simple answer is no. I can give you a longer answer.
Okay.
And that longer answer is that estrogen is not one thing. Estrogen
okay.
is hundreds of different things. What is tamoxifen?
Oh, I wish I knew, but I don't want to take it.
It's an estrogen. Tamoxifen is estrogen. Yes, indeed. And why do they want you to take it?
I guess to control all my hormones, to prevent a future cancer.
To prevent cancer, right. So you see, if flaxseed made your estrogen level go up, it would be good because that's what they want, isn't it? They want to give you estrogen. But you see, you must remember that estrogen is not one thing. There are estrogens made by your body, innate estrogens. There are estrogens that are in the environment. Those are xenoestrogens. And there are estrogen-like substances, but no actual estrogens, in plants called phytoestrogens. Study after study has found that phytoestrogens act like tamoxifen in the body to prevent and reverse cancer.
Okay. So you agree that I shouldn't be taking the standard treatment, the tamoxifen? And I could
you
do some...
You make your own decisions about what you are going to do. You do not have cancer. You have stage, it isn't cancer. So whatever you decide will have an impact on your health, and you have to decide whether it is worthwhile to treat yourself for something you don't have.
Right. That's how I think.
Rather like the person who's sprinkling something in the yard and said, what is that? And they said, this is a magic substance that keeps elephants away. And so says, well, elephants don't live here. And the person says, see how effective it is?
Correct.
Right. So, yeah, you can keep the elephants away, but elephants don't live here. So
what
I am suggesting is that you stop trying to get rid of something and focus on being healthy.
Thank you.
Do you understand
the difference? Thank you so much. Yes, absolutely.
So
I'm working.
Right. Drink your nourishing herbal infusions. If you are concerned, cook yourself up a batch of flaxseed muffins. You need... If you're making a dozen, you'll need 36 tablespoons of ground flaxseed in there. You need 3 tablespoons full in each muffin. The flaxseed must be ground and it must be cooked in order to be effective according to the studies that have been done that show effectiveness against cancer. There are lots of people out there promoting flax in other ways, but we don't have any studies. We just have their opinions.
How many muffins a day?
Okay. Drink your nourishing herbal infusions. You doing that?
I'm kind of starting. I'm doing smoothies. I'm changing my whole lifestyle after this diagnosis. So I'm brand new.
So you're changing your lifestyle in which way?
I'm doing some yoga stretches every morning, dedicating time
to...
meditation, and I'm doing smoothies. I started some psychotherapy, and my psychotherapist is the one who recommended me to you. I found out about you last night. She told me your book is her Bible, and I respect her a lot. I've gone for 3 sessions, and my life has improved a lot. I feel more aware, and I feel great.
I
have
so
one more question. I don't know if we have time.
Sure.
Last year, I stopped taking some Chinese herb that I took to make my periods regular, and I don't remember the name right now.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if that helps, but it's a two-word name for Dong Quai. Dong Quai, that's what it is.
It's good. Then it's probably Dong Quai.
Dong Quai. Sorry about my accent. Do you
no
think
problem.
That this could be to blame for my stage zero
Absolutely
abnormal
not.
Cell
you
effort?
Had, hello. No. You had nothing. You had nothing. You don't have anything.
Okay.
You did not
and
have
to,
cancer.
And to still
stage
make
zero,
my periods regular?
Yes.
Right. And it, to still be able to have my periods.
How old
I was taking it because my periods were irregular.
How old are you?
I'm 43, about to turn 44 in 2 months. Never had children.
It's quite possible that you are entering your menopausal years and that irregular periods are regular.
Right. And also I was diagnosed with polycystic ovaries when I was a lot younger, and I never treated it.
Doesn't need to be treated that I know.
Right. So don't worry about my periods if I'm not planning on getting pregnant.
Correct.
But my mood is affected. I get really cranky and out of balance when I don't get my period on time.
Menopause.
Great.
You are definitely starting your menopause.
All right.
And so
one more thing to deal with.
You're going to have a little cranky girl here, so don't worry about it.
Okay. All right. Thank you so
All right.
much. Great talking to you.
And to you. Green blessing. Good night.
Bye.
So we do have another caller on here. We have about
right.
just over five That's minutes until the guests arrive.
Okay.
So in the 541 area code.
Hi, Susan. It's an honor. Got to study with you with Jane Bothwell about 10 years ago over here on the West Coast.
Yes.
I was the only man out of 20 women, and it was a dear honor. And here I am loving your show.
Thank you so much. Those are wonderful times at Jane's.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about essential oils. I've been hearing you talk about it, and I just want to understand more how you came to your position, because I usually get my feathers ruffled by things you say, and then I end up agreeing with them. So I'm just wondering how you got to where you are.
In 1 year, I was approached by three different women whose immune systems were basically in tatters. And I asked myself, was there anything similar about these three women?
Mm.
What was similar about them is that they were all massage therapists.
Interesting. So am I.
And I began to ask them what kinds of things they used when they were giving massages. Mm. And they all added essential oils to their massage oils.
Mm-hmm.
And I then started looking more deeply into essential oils. I will tell you that my intuition has always been something not okay about essential oils. Maybe it wasn't even just my intuition. Maybe it was my experiences. Maybe it was taking one drop of essential oil of thyme and putting it on the throat of my cat and having all of her hair fall off her body.
Wow.
Maybe it was seeing a woman die because she drank a bottle of pennyroyal oil.
Mm.
Right. Maybe That's it wasn't just intuition. Maybe it was also some experiences that I had. But I will tell you that, about 22 years ago, one of my major distributors in New York City, small local distributor, but one of my major distributors for Manhattan, called me up and said, I want you to come to the city and I want you to have lunch with me. I have a proposition for you. I was happy to go down, have lunch with Saul and talk to him. he was a kind of interesting, real old-style businessman. And he said, you know, nobody's books sell the way your books sell. He says, and I want to put you really on top, he said. And I've been thinking about, you know, what I could suggest to you that would make us both a whole lot of money. He said, and there's going to be the hot new thing that's going to be happening is essential oils. And I want you to write the book on essential oils, and I've got some backers, and we'll give you $1 million advance.
Wow.
And I looked at Saul, and I said, Saul, even $2 million would not be enough to convince me to write a book about essential oils. I'm an herbalist.
Thank you.
So you may have heard me talk about something that went on at the American Herbal Guild a few years back. I was teaching there, and I had a booth there, and I wasn't at my booth or teaching. I was walking around looking at everybody else's booth. And there was a booth that had essential oils, and I took a step back from it. I don't like to get too close to them. And the woman behind the booth said, oh, come over here. We have really good essential oils. I said, no, I don't have anything to do with essential oils. And from underneath the booth came Peter Holmes. Peter's a wonderful herbalist. I adore
him. Oh, yeah, I know him.
So fabulous. Oh, his mind. Oh, is to lust for, right? And he's, you know, reasonably tall, and so he kind of unwinds himself from under the table, which had a skirt, so I couldn't see him under there, and he says, what do you mean you don't use essential oils? You can't be an herbalist if you don't use essential oils. He says, besides which, your remedies don't work if you don't add essential oils to them. He said, I add essential oils to every herbal remedy that I use. He says, you have to come to my class this afternoon. We've got to get you straightened out about the essential oils. So I went to Peter's class that afternoon. And I'm sure you've been in this kind of situation. You know, it's a conference, and we're in a hotel. And so the big ballroom is divided into like four or five classrooms, and there are long, narrow classrooms. But the teacher way up at the front, and then the students, you know, in rows and chairs. And I came in, and I took a chair from the very last row and made a behind-the-last-row row with just myself in it. And Peter began. He was talking about using essential oils as anti-infective agents. And he would open a bottle of essential oil, and then he would pass it through the room as he was talking about it. And when the person in the last row got it and turned around to pass it to me, I would put out my hand so that, you know, after the first three or four times they got it, they didn't even try to pass it to me anymore. So I never touched or even, you know, was in very close proximity to the oils at all. When I left, and I think the class was about an hour and a half, I left and I went back to my booth, and my booth was right next to the Frontier booth. And I mention this because I think it's important in the story to know that the person at the booth next to mine wasn't selling books. They were selling herbs, or a person who's used to herbs and used to the smells of herbs. And so I walked, sat down next to my booth, and she turns to me and she says, my gosh, where have you been? You reek!
Wow. Just from being around it.
Just from being around it. So Peter told us, and I have to make this story short because we have some guests coming on. Peter told us that to make an essential oil, you extract the volatile oils, you concentrate them, and you purify them. Anytime we want to make a drug from a plant, that is how we do it. Extract.
That's what you said last time, and that really pierced
me. Concentrate and purify. That's how we make a drug.
Yeah.
So I think it's clear essential oils are drugs.
Do you feel like the plants aren't happy with it either?
How many pounds of lavender and 1 ounce of lavender oil?
Yeah, so much. It's like a lot, yeah.
A lot. We're talking hundreds of pounds, perhaps 1,000 pounds. I've been very hard-pressed to get somebody to give me a straight answer. The answers vary all over the place. So, I don't think the plants are happy with it.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for calling. I regret.
Oh, I love you so much. You're the best.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Good night. Green blessings.
Green blessings.
Okay. We got Dr. Elsbeth Muth and Freddie Zentel Weaver with us.
They were here, and it looks like their call has dropped, so hopefully they'll call back in.
Hopefully they will call back. Dr. Elsbeth Moos was born and raised in Germany, and she has been developing her career over the past 40 years in the United States and Europe. She holds a doctorate in education and a master's degree in music, and she has been an associate professor at Musikhochschule Nordrhein-Westfalen in Germany and Berklee School of Music in Boston. She was a research fellow at the University of Indiana in Indianapolis and is trained as an ontological design coach, employing the principles of the philosophy of language. And Dr. Elsbeth Moos is also a certified Tantra yoga teacher. Freddie Zentel Weaver co-led creative self-discovery seminars at the Institute for Creative Living in Los Angeles, San Diego, San Francisco, and Hawaii. He employs the creative self-discovery approach as developed and pioneered by his father, psychiatrist and author Fred Weaver, MD. Freddie Zentel has served as a teacher and district-wide human relationship counselor in the Los Angeles Unified School District and is a performing artist with a one-man show called Sexual Enlightenment, currently touring in the United States. Look for it. Freddie Zentel Weaver is an accomplished percussionist, a stand-up comedian, and storyteller. He uses humor, music, and movement in his presentations and trainings, and Freddie holds a bachelor's degree in political science and is a certified body worker. Can I welcome Elsbeth and Freddie to the show? Hello, are you here?
Does not look like they...
Oh, there's somebody. All right.
Hello.
Hello. Is that
this is not your
Weaver?
No, it's not.
Okay.
I was
okay. Sorry, I thought I saw the question mark come up, and I thought that might be them, but it's not. So they have not called back in yet.
Okay. Well, is this someone who has a question who's on the phone with us right now?
Let's open up the mind factory.
Yes, it is.
Yes, and do you have a question?
Yes, I do.
You interrupt us if they call in, please?
I surely will.
Thank you. Please go ahead, then.
I'll make it quick. I'm calling from St. Paul, Minnesota again. I talked to you about 2 weeks ago. I was concerned about getting rid of medications I had taken that had ended me up in the hospital. We had a conversation about the liver and the kidneys and the filters and all that. Anyway, long story short, I heard your reference to ground flaxseed baked in muffins. Now, I've been doing flaxseed oil with cottage cheese because it becomes water soluble and enters the body quicker that way, I'm understanding. And my question is it the lignans in the flaxseed that clean out the cells in cancer, or what do you know about this? Because I know lignans are present in vegetables.
I object to your language strenuously.
My what?
Your language. I object to your language strenuously.
Oh.
There is no cleaning out of any cell. I don't that language.
I misspoke.
There is nothing
dirty
or unclean about cancer. Cancer cells are the youngest, healthiest, and most vigorous cells in the body. That's why they can kill.
Makes sense. Okay, then I misspoke. Yeah, I see your point.
Yeah, so we don't want to clean anything out of the body ever.
Such as the heroic tradition states, right?
That's the heroic tradition. Cleaning and cleansing anything that's alive will always lead to damage.
Well, old habits die hard when you're a guy.
so we don't want to do that at all.
Okay.
So here's my understanding. There was a woman who lived in Germany named Johanna Budwig. And Johanna went into hospital and used flaxseed oil that was ground then on the spot and gave it to people. Any flaxseed oil that is older than 60 seconds old is, according to the experts that I have consulted, is cancer in a can.
Really? Well, it's, oh my God. Well, you're talking about a large, huge section of the market for essential fatty acids. That's a huge...
It is pretty easy to confuse people. Think about all the people who buy margarine.
Okay, they are here, Susan. So
okay,
thank
good.
You. Thank
I
you for your time,
been
Susan.
Some help to you.
Yes,
welcome.
Very much. Thank you.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome, Dr. Elspeth Muth and Freddie Zentel Weaver. I don't know if you got to hear me do the introductions, but while we were waiting for you, I went ahead and introduced you, and I'm really happy to have you on my show here at Blog Talk Radio, and this, of course, will also be on Women's Radio as well.
Ah,
so
great.
How did the two of you meet?
Well, you know, we met in Chicago online. Yeah, I was in software business, and a company had moved me here to Chicago about 13 years ago. And Elspeth was here, and she was single, and she had her profile on a dating site. And I was looking for Shakti, a female tantra partner, and we met, and the rest is history. We almost immediately transcended the romantic drama and created this work.
Wonderful. And that was how long ago?
13 years ago.
13 years ago. Rich period.
Yeah.
So you've been working together for most of that time.
Yeah, the
yes,
whole time.
Actually, pretty much immediately when we met, we decided that we wanted to do something together and started, you know, developing workshops and created the company, and it's been an adventure ever since.
So when you go out and you teach tantra workshops, do you find that there are mostly people who are in new relationships or mostly people who are in established relationships and have been together for a while?
Oh, it is so mixed. We work with both couples and singles. So couples often come to us either to expand their relationship in their love or to prevent a breakup or rekindle their connection. And many singles come to us to look at what's in the way of creating a wonderful relationship, or discovering that where they are and what they have is totally wonderful and they, you know, are happy. So it depends a little bit.
So let me see if I can infer the answer to my question, since you didn't actually answer it. I asked if you worked more with couples who were just newly together or couples who'd been together for a long time. And what I think I heard you say was that primarily it's couples who've been together for a while and have established relationships.
I would say more, yes, couples who have been together than really new ones.
In the beginning part of the relationship, the sexuality just seems to carry itself.
Exactly.
Exactly. It doesn't seem to require too much thought. And
then after
the relationship is established, shall we say, after the honeymoon is over, then we start to say, Is there something I'm missing here?
Yeah. After the in the beginning, given the hormones are raging on their own, it's actually what we found not such a great time for couples to come to us because they are so enveloped in their bliss that you know the other person looks just wonderful and fine and perfect. However, then when that, you know, subsides a little bit, that is actually then a good time to really look at, because then creating partnership starts. So.
It's like something that I often say, the community is not a group of people who agree, but a group of people who disagree and yet are willing to support each other.
Yes.
And just so in any mature relationship, we must, in a way, get over the bliss of thinking this person is just like me and we agree on everything, and come to the realization that they're not just like me. And we may disagree on a lot of things, but that doesn't mean that we have to let go of love.
That definitely shows up in our relationship. You know, Fred, do you want to tell about your motorcycle passion?
Oh, right. Well, you know, Susan, we have been together for 13 years, but we live and work together as well, so that's like 26 years. So it's important for us to have breaks and, you know, alone time. So I got a Harley-Davidson last summer, and I was planning a 1 week, 1,000-mile ride, and Elsbeth didn't want me to go, and I left anyway. And, of course, while I was gone, I'd check in with her, and she would be, like, out gad-flying around and having more fun than and doing things that she didn't do when we were always together working, you know. So it was a good thing for both of us, you know. So it's important to recognize and remember, you know, that, you know, you are two individuals. Yeah. That's important.
Absolutely.
To do that.
And that there's an underlying commitment to each other and to what we are here to bring to the world. And that is really the, you know, the art that holds us together, or that we want us to hold us together.
Yes. That we choose.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yes.
Choice is a big one.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I agree with you. I think that it's very vital to have that alone time and to have a relationship that is two separate individuals, because after all, that's really what makes us interested in another person, is that they are different.
Yeah, the opportunity, I always say, in relationship is to learn to allow and grow to allow the other to be fully and totally who they are, which really requires getting ourselves out of the way.
I'm sure that a lot of our listeners are going, okay, all right, when are they going to start talking about sex after all? This is about tantra.
Exactly.
Right? Tantra, sex. And
yes.
I know, and you know, that tantra is about a whole lot more than sex. How do you explain this to people?
So we speak a lot about sexual energy and how we see sexual energy is that it is life force energy, and it can show up non-aroused and aroused. Just right now, we are all here, you know, in this show, we speak, and energy is running through us. And then, of course, then there may be at another time when we are fully aroused, you know, on a scale from 1 to 10, you know, the climactic moment is the 10, and everything in between, and all of it is life force energy, most of the time more in its subtle form, non-aroused, and then at certain times in the aroused form. And so the question here is, how can we make use, or how can we channel that wonderful life force energy that runs through us already and really start creating with it? Of course, that energy has brought us forth. It's the energy that creates new life through us. So, however, what we really bring here is that we can bring consciousness and awareness to that wonderful energy, and then learn through particular practices to move the energy from our lower centers, from our sexual center up into our heart center and beyond into the third eye, so that the energy can circulate and we can imbue our body with that wonderful energy for the sake of, you know, health or for emotional well-being or for imbuing our thoughts, wishes, intentions, and so forth.
So you see, one of the focuses of Tantra as being to, first of all, recognize that sexual energy is a life force energy, and then to understand that it while it can be used in the service of orgasm and pleasure, there are also other uses for it.
Absolutely. You know, forever we've been procreating, creating new life with this energy. And, you know, over the last 100 or so years, recreating with the development of contraceptives. And what we advocate and what we share is how to co-create with this energy. So the kernel of this energy, the foundation of this energy is creative. It creates life and pleasure. And there is a systemic relationship there. Creativity and pleasure show up everywhere in life, or can, where we work, where we live, the people we're around. When we start bringing consciousness to the sexual energetic in its subtle forms and aroused forms, that's the developed observer mind and the conscious parasympathetic breath and muscle awareness, what starts to show up, interesting enough, is creativity and pleasure in other areas of life that seem completely unrelated to sex in the simple process of living itself. If you think of this energy as primordial, essential, without it we wouldn't be here. Whether you're listening to this show or doing our work or reading our book, when we're in this energy, we're more open, loving, vulnerable, receptive. Chemically we change, oxytocin's released, endorphins are enhanced, serotonin, and so on. So there is a relationship that allows us to go deeper, intimacy, into me I see. And it's me creating what I'm getting, consciously or unconsciously. So if there's something that I have something about, like, oh, there's no good women, or, you know, I hate my job, 30 more years of retirement, what am I going to do? I'm running that story. But it doesn't look like, as you mentioned earlier in the evening when we came on, to have choice is something that shifts the whole thing. Once we choose something, the energy shifts, the emotion shifts, the chemicals that we release shifts, the way we feel shifts, and we start to show up differently and experience different opportunities in our lives. And that's kind of the magic of it all. You know, kind of, you might say, oh, well, this is kind of woo-woo. Well, the whole thing's woo-woo when you think that we evolved from single-celled amoebas, multi-celled organisms, a universe that goes on for ad infinitum. I mean, really? <You know? laughs> And this energy was creating life before we were aware of our own existence as thinking Homo sapiens. So, it's new and it's old.
Absolutely. Now, I think that maybe in your statement you were using the word SEX to stand in for intercourse, because you said that this has nothing to do with sex, but I do beg to differ, because I think everything in life has to do with sex, although it doesn't have to do necessarily with intercourse.
Absolutely. So, I would agree with you there.
So, and I dislike this conflation of sex with intercourse, because to me they're two very different things. And being a pansexual person, I am capable of connecting sexually with a great many life forms that would be incapable, awkward, or just darn strange if we were to attempt intercourse.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's still sex.
Hmm.
Whether it's orgasmic or not, because neither do I define sex as that which leads inevitably to orgasm. So this life force energy, this sexual energy, permeates and is imbued in everything. And we limit it in our stories, as you're so very clearly saying, to intercourse. And
that's,
to me, is especially important, because I work with a lot of postmenopausal women who say, I'm not interested in sex. And when we pull it apart, they're actually very interested in sex. What they're not interested in is intercourse.
Yeah, totally. I totally resonate with what you are sharing here, that it's the tuning with the energy that doesn't have to take on a particular form. But that can be totally experiential and, felt.
You know, it is true that as you continue these practices, one can become attuned, as you said, in pansexual sense, to the deepening connection that happens in that sexual experience that's available at any time, any moment, anywhere, by yourself or with another, and just breathing the air. Again, if you think of sex as so essential, without it we wouldn't be here, and the elements are creativity and pleasure, then anything creative and pleasurable could be considered sexual. So in that sense is what, not that sense, it's in reality what happens is that is what gets unlocked for people when they bring consciousness to the sexual. The divine shows up. And we transcend the lust, we transcend the unconsciousness, and for us here with what we do in our book, Sexual Enlightenment, and with our workshops we've been doing for the last 13 years all over the world now, and seeing what's happening for people and in our own lives, it's really about, at the deepest level, creating more joy, happiness, and peace in the world.
It certainly is, and we are thrilled that Dr. Elspeth Moof and Freddie Zentel Weaver are out there creating more joy and happiness in the world. Really, we definitely need it. We're going to talk some more, but if people want to get in touch with you, what would be the best way for them to get in touch with you?
The best way is our website. It's called tantranova.com, TANTRANOVA.com. And they can get our new book, Sexual Enlightenment, there, or our free practices, how to create love and intimacy, all available at tantranova.com.
Tantranova.com. Wonderful. Thank you for making that available and for having the practices available to people. Listeners, don't poo-poo it. Tantric practices are very fractal. They look very simple on the surface. They're like koans. They don't seem to have a whole lot of meaning. It's just like, oh, you do this. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But if you do it, if you actually do it and you're conscious and you do it, it keeps unfolding and unfolding and unfolding like the thousand petals of the lotus.
You sound like a tantric yourself.
Yeah.
Well, of course.
Of course,
yes. Since my early 20s, I've been working on it for close to half a 100 years here.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
You know, it's as far as I am concerned, everything in life is in bliss, and we're the only ones who are missing out. Of course, we're the only ones who can prepare for things. So it's, you know, it's kind of a two-edged thing there. And, you know, I'm interested in whether or not you see that the practices have different results if done by men and women. I think it's the question I want to ask you. Like, if there's a practice, say, at Tantra, Nova.com, and a woman engages in that practice and a man engages in that practice, will they get to the same place? Will they have the same results?
Well, you know, I'll just say that ultimately, yes, because ultimately the key, as you said, you know, we can plan for things. And in all meditation practices, it's about letting go of the planning, letting go of the thinking to become no mind. And in that approach, or in getting there for the man who is, you know, more linear and less cognitively flexible in terms of left brain, right brain, in this work, it's a practice of learning to integrate the masculine and feminine dynamic that allows him to have a richer experience and a fuller experience emotionally in terms of what's possible in this life. And for the woman, Elspeth can speak to that.
Yeah, for us women, it's much more about awakening, reawakening our wonderful feminine essence. And, I mean, for one reason, awakening, it has to do with estrogen. We call it the slow hormone, unlike testosterone, which is the quick hormone. So for us women, it's not about learning to sustain. Unlike for men, how we work with men is that they learn to sustain their wonderful energy and circulate their energy so that they can become present while they are in that energy versus being swept away by the energy. for us women, it's also our sexual center is inward. Also feminine sexual energy hasn't been celebrated over the millennia, rather the opposite, more vilified. You know, when we look at teenage boy and girl and they have sex together, the boy may go home and tell his dad, and then the dad gives him a high five and, you know, says, now you're a man and tear a few rubbers. While the girl most likely doesn't go home, I didn't. It would have been the last thing I would have done, although my parents found out and then all hell broke loose. But for that very reason, I didn't want to go home because then the fear of no longer being good enough or being sinful or, you know, damaged good, all kinds of interpretations.
Oh, and it starts early. I remember turning 12 and my mom saying, now you can't wear patent leather shoes anymore. And I looked at her and I said, what's so magic about 12 that I can't wear? She says, boys will look up your skirt in the reflection of the shoes. I mean, what an introduction to sex. Boys will look up your skirt in the reflection in your shoes? What? It's like... Is this a whole, is this a human we're talking about here? Oh, my goodness. I have been having so much fun with you that I have stopped looking at the time, and we have only 90 seconds left. I give them to you. What do you want to leave people thinking about?
Oh, that they can learn much more about what we started to, you know, unravel here with you and you with us in our book, Sexual Enlightenment. There are also very concrete practices that can people download when they buy the book and start practicing. And then, of course, as I said earlier, we have the 10 practices for totally free how to create love and intimacy in one's life and relationship. But there are practices that one can do by oneself, and then there are practices one can do with a partner. And then we have a home study course that is right available at the homepage as well. And then all of our workshops here in Chicago and in Massachusetts and on a cruise in the Hawaiian Islands. I mean, it's endless.
Sounds wonderful and juicy. Go to tantranova.com. Thank you, everybody, for being here Susan Weed, Dr. Elspeth Muth, Freddie Zentel Weaver, and helping us to reweave the healing cloak of the ancients. I got to get hold of a copy of that book. Green blessings.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Susan.